The Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee will now come to order. Brenda, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Here.
Representatives Alexander?
Here.
DeLupis?
Here.
Usada?
Here.
Chaney?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Diamond, excused. Fine?
Here.
Hardy?
Here.
Hanshofsky?
Here.
Lamarcus?
Here.
McFarland?
Here.
Mooney?
Here.
Umfroy? Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Here.
Tomco?
Here.
Trunell?
Here.
We have a quorum, Chair.
Members, announcements. I just want to remind everyone that the House has implemented detailed procedures designed to make our meeting safer during the present time. Audience members and presenters speaking at the podium must keep your mask on while addressing the committee. I also want to remind members to speak into your microphone while voting to ensure you can be heard. Additionally, members, please remember to turn off your electronic devices or move them to silent mode. Today, members, we'll hear four different bills. Why don't we get started with HB 1429, Tourist and Conventional Development Taxes, by Representative Avila. Representative Avila, you are recognized to explain HB 1429.
Thank you, Chairman, members. Members, House Bill 1429 will provide local governments with additional flexibility to address the realities and implications of funding. The bill allows local governments levying tourist development taxes and convention development taxes to use those funds to finance flood mitigation projects and improvements. This bill will provide those local governments with the ability to use those funds for vital projects they believe will provide the greatest benefit to their community. The bill also changes the adoption process and duration of tourist development taxes and convention development taxes. The bill requires a referendum for all new taxes. It also requires new taxes and existing taxes to be renewed by referendum on a five-year basis. The referendum must be approved by a majority of the electors. Members, that is the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Avila. Members, we're in questions on the bill. Questions. Representative Hanshofsky, you are recognized in questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Avila. I appreciate the amount of time you took with me this weekend to go through some of my concerns about the bill. And I understand the idea is to have more money available for flood mitigation projects. My one concern is regarding the five-year referendum and the fact that to bond flood mitigation projects, for example, 5 years normally won't be enough. Are you willing to relook at the referendum portion of it, or is there something that could be done with that portion of it to make sure that the funding would be in place for the projects that are needed?
Representative Avila, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for that great question, and thank you for taking the time this weekend. I know that I reached out to every single member either. First, I started out with the text because I understood that it was the weekend, and all of you were with your families. I know that some of you reached out, and I appreciate certainly your time, Representative. So I wanted to thank all the members of the committee before answering your question. With regards to your question, so any right now, the requirement to renew these taxes every 5 years does not apply to any project that is currently bonded out. So if let's say a local government has a project that they bonded out right now before the implementation date of July 1st, 2021, right now that project is still going to continue to get bonded out. And it's still going to continue to be funded. There isn't going to be any hiccup with regards to that project that is currently bonded. With regards to now when they renew and reauthorize whether it's TDT or CDT, whenever they reauthorize these taxes on a five-year basis, when they bond out a project within that timeframe, then at that point, that project would have to be bonded out for those 5 years. So that's basically the difference in terms of what is in terms of a project that's bonded out. Right now, before the reauthorization period in 2026, and before the implementation of 2021, any currently bonded out project will be funded. That bond will be honored, and will be paid for with those funds. Once that reauthorization occurs for everyone in terms of 2026, then at that point, those bonds would have to be on a five-year basis.
Representative Honcheski for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. But every time you go out for a referendum, there's a voter education component, which also has an expense. And my concern is, with many infrastructure projects, including those that would be paid for through this tax, that 5 years isn't always a feasible time frame. I was on our MPO, and we know that a lot of these infrastructure projects do have a longer time frame than the 5 years. So my concern really is with that five-year referendum time period. So is there any possibility of making some modifications to that portion of it?
Representative Avila, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative. Certainly in talking with you and other members, and as we go through the committee process, certainly I'm one that has a history of working with all of the members, particularly, you know, in terms of through the committee process, working with the members on those committees. So certainly that is, you know, something that I will definitely look into, and certainly I would not mind, obviously, working with you on this bill as we move forward.
Thank you very much.
Members, we're in questions on the bill. Questions on the bill. Representative LaMarca, you're recognized in questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Speaker. With respect to the questions that were asked before about bonding, I'm going to dig a little bit into that if I could. And for example, in Broward County, we've got, I believe it's up to 7 cents, specifically one, the most recent penny that was voted on by the county commission. I was a no vote, but it was for expansion of the convention center hotel. I'm sorry, the convention center itself. Prior to that, there were a couple pennies in for the arena in Sunrise. Prior to that, there were three cents, call it, for tourist development, as well as beach renourishment dollars come out of that. First of all, I appreciate you bringing the bill forward, which includes some flood mitigation and other ways to have that flexibility. Where I'm having a concern about it is if you have a 30-year project like a $50 million convention center expansion over a period of time, you can't. Tell me if you could. Like, the question is, how do we work on those long-range bonded projects, not individual? For example, like a flood mitigation project that might take 2-3 years to permit and build, and you could probably do that in that period of time. But when you're talking about something on a major capital outlay with these taxes, how would you propose we deal with that uncertainty within the market?
Yeah. Representative Avila, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for that question. You know, certainly, I think, you know, and it obviously depends on each county and sort of the projects that they have going on, right? So you mentioned a few in terms of Broward County. You know, I think the general expectation is that a lot of these counties aren't going to be taking on these massive capital outlay projects on a very frequent basis, that they will look to prioritize certainly where those dollars are really better served for their community, right? So, and you touched on flood mitigation. So this bill, it has the flood mitigation piece in it where it's going to allow for local governments to do that. Certainly when you have the Secretary of DEP saying that, you know, by 2050, you're going to see 2.5 feet of water that will potentially affect over 300,000 homes and cost anywhere between $140 and $150 billion in property value. You know, that is an important aspect, certainly, of this bill. And hopefully the local governments can prioritize certainly where those dollars would go. And certainly, hopefully, they will prioritize certainly the flooding component in order to address these issues. Specifically with regards to the bonding question that you asked, you know, again, hopefully, you know, these local governments will make sure that they don't take on these massive capital outlay projects and really focus on these critical needs. So with regards to, let's say, a 30-year bond, certainly if right now currently, let's say a local government has bonded out a project, you know, that project will be honored. And the completion and the funding for that project will be, you know, will be dedicated. But starting in 2026, obviously when all of the counties would have to reauthorize, whether it's for TDT or CDT, you know, at that point forward, certainly, you know, those bonds would have to be on a 5-year basis to coincide with, you know, obviously with this bill.
Representative LaMarca for a follow-up.
So quick follow-up, and I guess I understand where you're going with this. Would you say, for example, so that we're clear on the long-range projects if they're already bonded, and that those would stay in perpetuity till they're, well, at least the completion date under that 30-year bond, would you say that kind of philosophically we've been talking about flood mitigation and sea level issues and climate, and this forces us to prioritize that with our locals to get the work done?
Representative Avila, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for that question. You know, I often say this in Miami-Dade, whenever it rains, I'm always asking my wife for scuba gear. You know, so whether it's, you know, a natural disaster like a hurricane, whether it's, you know, flash flooding, whether it's high tide, particularly in South Florida, right, Broward and Miami-Dade, Monroe, we see, and certainly parts of, you know, Tampa and Sarasota, you know, they see, really, it just picks up, right? And so a good portion of that is because the local governments haven't had the flexibility to really invest in flood mitigation. And so this is really to provide them with another tool. So yes, hopefully for our residents, they will prioritize flood mitigation going forward, and certainly be able to use this as an additional tool in their toolbox.
Thank you.
Members, we're in questions. Questions of the sponsor. Representative Fine, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me say at the outset, I love the bill, and I'm a huge supporter. But I want to see if I can clarify, I think, the concern that people are asking, and maybe distill it down to something that I'm able to understand. Here's the hypothetical. Imagine last year I do a project related to anything, let's say a convention center, and I borrow the money in a way that I have to pay it back over 30 years. And my vehicle, so I did this in 2019, it's gonna take me till 2049 to pay it off. And my vehicle to pay that back is my TDT funds. And now 5 years from now, your great bill passes, and in 5 years from now, we have a referendum in Brevard County. And all the smart people in my county vote against it, and we end these taxes. So they go away. But those taxes were the funds that were supposed to pay back the 30-year project that we did in 2019. So if I borrowed money last year for something that's going to take 30 years, and then 5 years from now, the voters say we don't want to do tourist development taxes anymore, how do you solve for that issue? I think that's kind of the crux of the question that people are getting at.
Representative Avila, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Fine, for that great question. So again, anything that has already been bonded out as of right now, before July 1st, 2021, which is the implementation of this bill, anything that is bonded out before that time, that bond will be honored and that bond will be funded. And so they will continue to collect in order to make sure that that bond is paid. However, once that bond has been fully paid, at that point, in order for that local government to, you know, to have TDT or CDT they would have to get it reauthorized via referendum with their voters. And so their voters have to approve of that referendum after that bond has been paid off.
Representative Fine for a follow-up.
Okay, then, so to clarify, so if in 2019 I did a 30-year bond and I expected every single dollar of my TDT for the next 30 years to pay off that bond, I don't have to do a referendum on that. That every 5 years won't happen for the 30 years until that bond is paid off. It's only, this five-year referendum is only gonna be if you don't need that money to pay off grandfathered capital projects. But new projects they probably can't put on a 30-year time frame because they may not get the money 5 years later. So anything you've already done is okay, but anything you're going to do, you gotta be careful. Is that an accurate way?
Representative Avila, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, so any new taxes would have to be approved by the voters on a five-year basis.
Members, we're in questions on the bill. Questions on the bill. Representative Hardy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Avila, for reaching out to me over the weekend. I get, and it's actually in here in black and white, lines 227 to 233 in your bill. Which basically says, in the case where the proceeds of a tax levied pursuant to this section have been pledged to secure and liquidate revenue bonds or revenue funding bonds as authorized by the section, the expiration of the tax shall not be effective, right? So totally understand that. Now, that aside, which is about stuff that people are committed to long term, my only question is, do you intend for the effect of the bill to limit the ability of local governments, these counties, to finance projects, not just with respect to flood mitigation, which this bill, which I think is a great bill, covers, but also with the traditional tourist development stuff, right? Is it your intent that they won't necessarily be able to finance these over the, you know, at a term that reflects the useful life of whatever they're financing? So if the useful life of whatever they're financing is 15, 20, 30 years, no matter what the useful life is, you've got to finance this at a maximum of 5 years. Is that the intention of the requirement?
Representative Avila, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for that great question. The intent is really to really kind of get the local governments to, one, give them the flexibility, right, to take on flood mitigation, which is, I mean, it's going to take a massive investment, both at the state level as well as the local level, but I think more so on the local, since obviously, you know, they're on the ground, right? So, you know, with that respect, it's really meant to give them flexibility. Now, in terms of the bonding, you know, it's really meant to kind of get them to shift their focus, certainly, probably more so away from these massive capital outlay projects, and kind of really reprioritize sort of the needs of the community specifically, right? So if flooding is your number one issue, particularly in South Florida, whether it's Monroe, Broward, or Miami-Dade, you know, then these local governments now have a tool to certainly invest these funds into their number one priority, whereas before they didn't. So it's really that five-year time frame is really more so meant to kind of guide them into really being able to focus on the specific needs of their community, not just in the short term, but also in the long term.
Members, we're in questions on the bill. Questions on the bill. Representative Trunow, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative, with the referendum every 5 years, it lines up with the 2026 election cycle. How does it line up with the election cycle moving forward?
Representative Avila, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for that. So the 2026 timeframe is obviously an even year. You know, we're going to have many elections that year. You know, so it lines up well in that aspect. Going forward, really, it's up to each local government and how they want to line it up. But it does need to be lined up on a five-year basis. So they could potentially wait a year, so that, let's say, if they reauthorize in 2026. And then 2031, they're up, They could wait a year so that it lines up, or they could just, you know, maybe have it line up so that 2031, they have the five-year wait, and then the election would be in 2036. Or they could literally wait a year, maybe have it line up so that it lines up with an even year. It's really up to the discretion of the local government.
Members, we're in questions on the bill. Any questions for the sponsor? Members? Okay, moving on, we have an amendment by Representative Avila, barcode 202547. Representative Avila, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a technical amendment that strikes out the word or. That is the amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Moving on, there is no public testimony on the amendment. Debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment, members? Representative Avila, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yay. All opposed, say nay. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended, and we do have public testimony on the bill. Up first, we have Matthew Forrest with Destinations Florida.
We respectfully waive an opposition.
Up next, we have Samantha Patigan with Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Samantha, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samantha Paget. I'm the General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. We appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today. Respectfully, we rise in opposition to the bill today. We understand the representative's desire to address these very important issues, but we do not feel that this is the best mechanism for doing so. FRLA has historically and consistently opposed expansion to approved uses of TDT dollars. These taxes were originally adopted for the specific purpose of marketing and advertising of tourism. With each expanded use, we dilute the effectiveness of the resources that are badly needed to promote tourism and attract visitors to the locations in which these taxes are collected. Here, the expansion for flood mitigation projects does not even require a showing of a direct nexus to tourism. Respectfully, we assert to the committee that in addition to existing revenues the local government entities can choose to appropriate for flood mitigation projects, there are other sources for funding of flood mitigation projects, such as FEMA flood mitigation assistance grants. These other sources should be evaluated before adopting yet another approved use for TDT revenues. This bill will take certain TDT dollars out from under the purview of TDCs, Tourist Development Councils, arguably removing these revenues from being considered as part of the TDC's overall marketing strategy and budget proposals. This bill will require the readoption of the TDT taxes and all of the additional percentages every 5 years. This means that in addition to local governments expending the additional dollars to pay for the referendum, TDCs or local governments will spend time and resources every 5 years to promote readoption rather than concentrating their efforts on the work of tourism promotion. And we would again highlight the concerns that previous folks have raised in regards to bonding, that many projects, especially the ones that we've referred to, often extend out 15, 10, 20, 30 years. And with the language of this bill as it currently sits, those types of projects will no longer be possible because no one will be able to do those large projects within that five-year period. Respectfully, again, we rise in opposition, and we look forward to continue to talking about this issue as the bill moves forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have David Serter with Statesman for Florida's Change. Mr. Serter, he is a proponent of the bill. Up next, members, we're in debate. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Smith, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the opportunity, and Rep, I enjoyed our text exchange on this. And as I told you before, I'm up on the bill today because I told you I would be. But I tell you, from hearing you present the bill and some of the questions asked by the committee, it put even more questions in my head already. So I'll be up on the bill today, but I hope we can continue to work on this because I know I'll see it again at State Affairs. But again, thank you for bringing the bill forward, and I will be up on it today.
Members, we're in debate on the bill. Representative LaMarca, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for getting some of these questions answered. And I'm going to follow a little bit of what Representative Smith said. I won't see it again until its final spot, if it gets to the House floor. I'm going to support it today because it needs to move through the process if it's going to get a little more palatable. And I'm going to support it here, and I hope it has a little different perspective when it gets to us. But thank you very much.
Members, we're in debate on the bill. Representative Hardy, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you. First off, I want to commend you, Representative Avila. I think this is a very bold effort. You know, I think it gives local governments the option to use these resources in ways that actually comport with the needs of their community. And I think we have to get away from the idea that, you know, when tax revenue is raised from what is sometimes a pretty narrow interest, that we should only spend that money on the interest from which the tax, you know, was raised. Communities have needs, and that's what public dollars are for. And these are public dollars. These, you know, these don't belong to the hotels or you know, to any special interest. And so, you know, I think this is a bold effort to move away from this tradition and actually help communities do what they need to do. In addition to that, I do have some concerns. These concerns will not keep me from voting for this bill today. But they are there. Raised by Representative Trunow, I didn't really think of the five-year timing of this with respect to elections in these off years. And that is a little concerning to me because I think what the result is, either you'd have to reauthorize more frequently in shorter time periods or have a gap year, which might be problematic. And so I think it would be great to have it at an even number. But in addition to that, there's the timing with respect to how projects can be bonded. Now, I find your argument about moving away from these mega projects actually pretty persuasive. I think we've seen local governments across the state spend this money on boondoggles. And I think that requiring them to bond it out over a shorter period of time reduces the potential bad uses for this money. And so I, you know, that's a little persuasive to me, but I still have some concerns. I'm really concerned about what happens if the legislature, and there's been talk of this before, changes the margin that is required for a tax referendum to pass. That is extremely concerning to me. And that, for me, the referendum part is the only sticking point for me in this bill. So I appreciate this effort. I think it's a step in the right direction. This is giving communities more options with the resources that they have, and I look forward to working with you. I, too, will see it on State Affairs.
Members, we're in debate on the bill. Representative Honchovsky, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I want to just echo the sentiments I've heard from Representative Smith, Representative Larkin, Representative Hardy. I will be voting up on this bill today. I will not see it unless it comes on the House floor. However, my one concern is the referendum. Again, we talk about flooding projects, flood mitigation projects, but those can also be projects that need more than 5 years. So, like I said, I appreciate the time you've taken to speak with me on this and your willingness to talk to us and work through this. But that was my main concern, is that referendum portion. And that's it.
Members, debate on the bill. Any further debate? Representative Mooney, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. And echoing the concerns, I understand now there's a few questions raised. I will see it again in State Affairs as well. But I knew this would cause a little bit of heartburn out there amongst TDCs. And coming from Monroe County, where I can tell you that if it was a vote tomorrow to abolish the TDC, it would probably win overwhelmingly because we run 98% right now today in the COVID world. That said, I'm a fan of TDCs, and I think that they do a wonderful job for not only the local communities but the entire state of Florida as a whole. I don't see this as being negative to them. I actually see it as a positive side to them, and I think the way we should view this is just another source. It may not be, we may not fund an entire project with these funds, but if you have a quick $5 million project, you need matching funds, and you've got a city who's got some cash, and state throws in some money, and all of a sudden you need a couple million. That's just designated as a recurring fund for, say, 5 years. It's not like it's going to be all or nothing for these TDCs is the way I view it. And I hope I'm correct on that, by the way. But I look at it, too, is that at some point, we cannot continue to be that emu and that little commercial there. Our heads are now coming out of the sand, so to speak. And I think this is a very brave and bold move you're bringing forward. And I think when it's all said and done, that it should be a very good symbiotic relationship between the TDC and local government to utilize the funds in a way that really benefits not only the citizens who are impacted by tourism, but and who, by the way, thrive because of tourism, but also enhances the quality of the visit for the tourists that do come here. Because if we don't save our beach berms, if we don't fund these kinds of projects somehow, and we all know the only other way to do it is to come begging at local, state, and federal levels, that in and of itself has proved many times to not work well, or you get a bone thrown at you. So I commend you, and I support this bill, and I think by the time it gets in state affairs, I believe that a lot of these particular questions and issues will have probably been smoothed out and sort of massaged and been well balanced out. So again, thank you for bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we're in debate on the bill. Any further debate? Okay, Representative Avila, you're recognized to close on HB 1429.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members, for your feedback, certainly for taking the time to have conversations with me regarding this bill, and I certainly look forward to that continuing. I do look forward to working with each and every one of you on your concerns, so please, certainly be on the lookout for me reaching out to your offices. You know, one thing I'll say is, you know, Florida is a very unique state, a very, very unique state. However, it also has many unique problems, right? Certainly being pretty much surrounded by water, you would think that that would be a pressing problem for the tourism industry. Now, the tourism industry, I'm just going to lay it out right now. They're never going to agree with this bill. It's never going to happen. The expanded use is just something that they will never support. I will say it on the record right now. They certainly agree with me on that aspect. But in saying that, listen, my mother, I'll share a personal story with you. My mother told me there are two things I don't want you to do or that I would not like you to do. One of them was to be an elected official. The other one was to be a soldier. I did both, and it worked out. So sometimes, you know, the things that you don't want, you know, someone to do or that you're constantly fighting doesn't necessarily mean that it's not good for your industry. And that's the case with this bill. The reality is, if you have widespread flooding because of sea level rise, king tide, natural disasters, I mean, you can go down the list. The things that we face as a state, no other state faces. So our policies have to be bold. Our policies just have to be, in order for us to make sure that we keep up and make sure that obviously we take all of those factors into account. And that's what this bill does. Is it perfect? Nothing in life is perfect. But certainly working with all of you, I can certainly make sure that we get it to a place that really puts our state at the front lines of combating floods and widespread flooding. That causes, obviously, a great deal of property value damage. It causes, certainly, tourists to reevaluate. Do I go to Florida where I might have two inches, 3 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches of rain or water, you know, at the knee level? Or do I go to, let's say, California? You know, those are factors that always need to be into consideration. Flooding in the state of Florida is a very big problem, and it will continue to be a very big problem. As I stated before, the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection stated that by the year 2050, we will see an increase of 2.5 feet of water. How do you combat that? By taking initiatives like this. So with that, members, I ask for your favorable support.
Brenda, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Alupis?
Yes.
Lusada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Diamond? Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Penchovsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably with a committee substitute. Congratulations. Up next, we'll have HB 1309, ratification of Department of Environmental Protection rules by Representative Payne. Representative Payne, you are recognized to explain HB 1309.
Raise the mic a little bit. Thank you, Chair. Committee members, good to see you all. Members, this bill, let me just speak just for a moment about the bill. There are seven members on this committee that weren't here last year. So this is an extension of a bill that we ran last year. There's a comprehensive water bill, and we finally get to the point where we can address the biosolids component of that bill. I will say that if you've had a chance to read the staff analysis, it's very well written. Alex, thank you for that. I'm sure you're involved with that. And we worked very closely last year, so thank you for that. This bill ratifies the Department of Environmental Protection's amended rules related to the use of biosolids. The amendment addresses potential nutrient impacts from the land application of biosolids at agricultural operations that could impair water quality. The amendments implement the Clean Waterways Act, that was Senate Bill 712 from last year, which became effective on July 1st, 2020, and the findings of Biosolids Technical Advisory Committee convened by the department in 2018 to evaluate current biosolids management practices to better protect Florida's water resources. Summary of the rule changes, there are three primary revisions that directly relate to the legislature's direction to adopt rules to minimize potential nutrient migration of biosolids at application sites. A phosphorus-based rate of biosolids application must be considered in addition to a nitrogen-based rate, and neither rate can be exceeded. Requirements for surface water and groundwater monitoring for sites, a prohibition on land application of biosolids on soils with a seasonal high water table within 6 inches of the soil surface unless a management plan provides reasonable assurance underneath House Bill 712, Senate Bill 712. These provisions also offer greater protection than the previous rule by reducing land application rates, monitoring for nutrient migration, and eliminating sites without reasonable assurance from a management plan where the water table is most likely to transport nutrients through shallow groundwater to surface water bodies. There are other notable revisions to the rule from Senate Bill 712, and I won't read all of those to you, but that's the bill, Chair.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Payne. Members, we're in questions. Is there any questions for the sponsor? Questions for the sponsor? Representative Overdorf, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I know there were some various conversations about this. Thank you for your work on this. Just a question on the variety of implementation dates that we have currently heading into this. If you could, we had a couple questions about that. If you could talk a little bit about why there's varying implementation dates associated with these variety of roles. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Payne, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative Overdorf. As we have talked before, the implementation of these dates through a long period of evaluation of biosolids, started back in when the rules were first adopted in 1990, amended in 2010, specific to this bill, DEP covered a TAC, or developed a TAC, a Technical Advisory Committee, back in 2018. With regard to where the bill was last year with the 712, Senate Bill 712, DEP published initial notice of the rule development to amend biosolid rules in 2019, March 2019, and they held workshops for those rules in 2019. In October 2019, they withdrew the rules and started all over, and it's probably had to do with a CERC component. And then in 2014, specific to your question, the notice of the rule development held a workshop in September of 2020 and published a notice of the proposed rule on December 20 through the CERC, include the CERC statement for a regulatory cost. So there is some questions on when we adopted the rule into law last year in the 2020 timeframe and then the implementing dates that followed. And if I can pull from those from the notes I have on that specifically. Give me just a second. So what we have is a new permit must comply by July 1st, 2020. That was last year. All permits must comply by July 1st, 2022. As of the DEP rules, new or amended permits have 1 year after the effective rule and then 2 years after DEP's effective rule. So, yeah, I realize there's some time frames there that feel like they're compressed, but the notification of the rule began the toll of the clock last year when it was first put into law.
Representative Overdorf for a follow-up.
So just a clarification follow-up question. Basically, everything is going to be implemented and in compliance then by July 2023, if I recall correctly. That's kind of the final compliance date. Is that correct?
Representative Payne, you're recognized.
Thank you. Assistant Secretary is here from DEP. John, do you want to ask some clarification to that, if you don't mind? Chair, thank you.
Mr. Truitt, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, yes, the 2022 date is the water table date that was specifically in the legislation. There are other components to the rule. Those other components would be the 2023 date. So again, it was very clarified in the law that the water table was the primary concern, and that date is 2022. Obviously, we can't change the rule. The remaining pieces with our public input, those involve some, you know, processing and analysis of sites, and the request was to allow for a little time to get that done. So that's why that other piece is in 2023.
Thank you very much.
Members, we're in questions. Questions for the sponsor. Representative Trunow, you are recognized in questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Payne. Would it be possible to change all the dates to conform to one date and make it July 1st, 2023? Representative, would that be a better thing to do?
Representative Payne, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Anything's possible. My door is always open. So let's continue to have the discussion. Thank you for coming to the office this morning, by the way. And for other members, I apologize if I didn't get to earlier in the day. Many of you received a text, but we've had some good conversations. I think that's possible. I need to speak to some other people that can give me a little more advice on that. But let's have more discussions. The door's always open, and as we move forward with this bill, you'll see it in State Affairs and on the floor. That's an opportunity. I know there are many of you on here that represent ag communities, and certainly I have a great interest in that myself. But thank you for the question.
Representative Trunow for a follow-up.
One more question about the Environmental Regulation Commission. Is it possible this is going to not be in front of that commission this go around on this legislation?
Chair. Representative Payne, you're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for the question. The Environmental Regulatory Commission didn't have enough members for appointment at the time. We felt like the TAC was the true evaluation of where we were with the biosolids component. Our ERC will not evaluate at this time. We feel like there's been enough vetting of the issues with biosolids. We felt like they wouldn't add nothing to the issue, and most of it had to do with a timing issue with regard to having their appointments before the legislative process of getting the rule ratified before the end of the year. The time they met, we would run the clock out on getting the ratification done. Thank you.
Members, we're in questions for the sponsor. Questions for the sponsor. Okay, moving on, there are no amendments. We do have public testimony. Deborah Foote with Sierra Club. Ms. Foote, you are recognized.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Deborah Foote. I'm the acting chapter director for Sierra Club, Florida. We do appreciate the incremental changes that are represented by the rule. However, we still have continued concerns about what is missing from the rule. First of all, we believe that North Florida should have the same protections as South Florida. The legislature must provide equal protection to all Florida waters as South Florida waters by requiring applicants to affirmatively demonstrate that the nutrients in the biosolids, and in this case we're talking Class B, will not add to the nutrient loadings in the watershed. As the staff analysis showed, we're going to be seeing, as a result of this rule, increased number of biosolids being converted to class AA. Class AA currently is only applied based on the instructions on the packaging. We believe that we must start to look at rules for class AA biosolids. We want to be sure that this type of application is limited based on crop needs in order to protect future waterways from nutrient pollution. We also need to see a comprehensive management scheme for dealing with growing population and growing sewage. Our current methods of dealing with sludge are not sustainable environmentally, economically, or from a public health perspective. And lastly, we'd love to see a pilot project which is using new technologies. Some of these technologies can actually create other types of products. One would be to remove phosphorus from biosolids. As we know, phosphorus is a huge component in our water pollution. It would be more effective to remove it before it pollutes our waterways rather than trying to remove it from polluted waterways. If we can generate phosphorus from sewage sludge, we can decrease phosphorus demand from other harmful sources such as phosphate mining. And so we also want to see sewage sludge, boy, that's a tongue twister, process to create valuable biofuels. And with that, I will conclude my comments.
Thank you, Chairman. I got a couple questions, if that's okay.
Representative Fine, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, and I appreciate you getting up here and speaking today. I have two questions. First, when you define North Florida versus South Florida, I've got friends in the legislature who claim that everything south of I-10 is South Florida. I'm just curious, in your perspective, where are the two sets of rules? What are the counties that are affected?
Actually, it's in statute, and I don't happen to know what that dividing line is, Representative, but I could look it up and get it to you.
Okay.
Representative Fine for a follow-up.
It's a separate question, which is obviously it sounds like you oppose the bill, but my question is this a step in the right direction? Are these regulations, in your opinion, better than the status quo? They may not be everything you want, but are we better off with these than what we have now, or are we better off staying with what we have today? Because those are the choices.
Right. There are some incremental improvements, yes.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Okay, moving on in public testimony, we have Christopher Dawson with Synagro Technologies, Inc., who's an opponent. Up next, we have Lisa Renneman with St. John's Riverkeeper. Ms. Renneman, you are recognized.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity and the committee to speak today. My name is Lisa Renneman. I'm the St. John's Riverkeeper. We're out of Jacksonville, Florida, but represent citizens in over 8,800 square miles, which is the St. John's River watershed, which begins in Indian River in Brevard County, which is part of North Florida for the purpose of this discussion. And we've been working on this for 3 years and appreciate Representative Payne and the opportunity to speak with our concerns earlier today. But this rule continues to fail our waters and our communities by inequitably forcing South Florida sewage sludge on North Florida. Florida has been facing a mounting water quality crisis for decades, with utilities favoring the cheap land disposal of sewage sludge, more pleasantly known as biosolids. In the early 2000s, the land disposal method of this black, slimy sludge, byproduct of wastewater treatment, resulted in a runoff of high phosphorus water into the Lake Okeechobee, and that's been fueling algae blooms and continues to do so today thanks to legacy pollution. In 2007, the Florida legislature took action and inadvertently approved the relocation of nearly 100,000 tons of sewage sludge from South Florida to the headwaters of the St. Johns in Indian, Brevard, and Osceola counties. This has led to a led to phosphorus-driven outbreaks of blue-green algae in the St. John's River. South Florida began trucking their sewage sludge north, and this algae that has been fueled by phosphorus has been spiked dramatically since this practice began. local governments, the water management districts, the Florida legislature, DEP, has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to remove expensive nutrient pollution. And unfortunately, this practice is not only undermining the river's health, it's undermining public investment. So unfortunately, DEP's hands have been tied because the protections in South Florida were granted in 2007 by the legislature. And so they cannot force South Florida to keep their own sewage sludge, so we're having to deal with it in other parts of the state. As a result, steps have been made in this rule to have incremental improvements, but the pending legislation does not go far enough, and it continues to penalize Floridians who did not have a say in the process back in 2007, and all of our recommendations have continued to fall on deaf ears. So what we're asking today is for the Florida legislature to protect all Florida waters equally, to protect all Florida communities, to protect our economy, to protect our water quality, to protect our health. And so we can begin today because this, while the incremental improvements are in this rule, we need to do much more. We need to prevent South Florida from sending their sewage sludge north. We need to invest in attainable technology and innovation. And we need to sustainably manage Florida's growing volume of sewage. We ask the Florida legislature to take a stand for all Florida waters. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Representative Overdorf. You are recognized for a question.
First of all, thank you for what you do and how you advocate. And as a riverkeeper, I really applaud the work that you're doing in advocacy. That being said, if what you're asking us to do, in other words, to tell South Florida to keep all of their biosolids, what do you have as a suggestion for how they should do that? And I don't mean to have a long discussion with you, but if you could just, you know, do a quick summary on that as to, you know, how are they going to be able to keep that knowing their growing population as well, et cetera, and to not put it all in landfills?
Yes. Ms. Reinemann, you're recognized.
Through the chair. Thank you, Representative, for that excellent question. I'll follow up with you with more detail. But as Deborah Fitt had mentioned, there are attainable technologies. In fact, Senator Mayfield had looked at some things in Brevard to do a pilot project. There are ways that are more cost-effective to remove the phosphorus before it's applied on farms, so it's better for the farms, it's better for the waterways, as well as you can create biofuels and other things. And so that would be number one. Number two is the legislature provided language in 2007 that applicants must affirmatively demonstrate there would not be phosphorus runoff into our waterways. We believe if this rule will do the same, that language is good for all Florida waters, and that would get us to something that's more sustainable long-term.
Thank Members, you. Any other questions
I
for
do.
Ms. Reinemann? Representative Fine, you're
Thank
recognized.
You. And again, I appreciate you being here. I'll talk about it in my comments. A great issue of concern to me. My question to you is this. Have you sort of voiced these concerns sort of in the administrative procedures as this
yes.
sort of rule was being developed prior to coming to the legislature today?
Yes,
Ms.
sir.
Ms. Reinemann, you're recognized.
Through the chair, excuse me. Through the chair to Representative Fine. Yes, sir. We have spent 3 years going to every technical advisory committee, every rulemaking workshop, multiple meetings with agency staff at the Water Management District and DEP, been out on the boat with the secretary himself talking about these issues, and submitted multiple comments. And so we've asked for the incremental changes to be stronger because right now our river is unusable at many times of the year, and it's not only undermining activities, but the health of all of us that live along the St. Johns.
Members, any further questions? Further questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman.
Up next, we have John November with Public Trust Law. Mr. November, you are recognized.
Good afternoon. My name is John November. I represent the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida. Thank you for hearing my comments today. Lisa mentioned in 2007 that the state of Florida banned the discharge of sewage sludge in South Florida because their waters had become impaired for phosphorus. These special protections for South Florida forced their sludge north. And unfortunately for the St. Johns River and the wildlife and the people that depend on it, the cheapest place for these haulers to truck and dump their semi-solid waste byproduct that originates at South Florida utilities is on the underserved rural communities of Osceola, Brevard, and Indian River County. This is particularly concerning because much of the upper St. John's River Basin is also currently suffering due to excess phosphorus. So you may be asking yourself, why are North and Central Florida not receiving the same protections as South Florida, even though our waters share the same impairments for phosphorus? Well, I'll answer that question with another question. How can North Floridians justify the expenditure of billions of dollars on wastewater infrastructure as we stand idly by allowing these wastewaters to flow north into our own backyards? They're dumped right onto the St. John's River, a river that is so central to the economic, cultural, and environmental vibrancy of the communities that depend on it. On December 31st, 2012, the last drop of South Florida water's waste touched their own shores, and the exodus of poop entering North Floridians' backyards from the south reached an all-time high. From 2012 to 2013, the total metric tons of phosphorus from biosolids applied in the upper basin doubled. Over the next 5 years, phosphorus levels in the St. John's River water quality samples consistently jumped to 6 times higher than they were before the South Florida ban became effective. For example, in Jane Green Creek between 2017 and 2018, sampling results showed that phosphorus levels regularly range from 3 times to 10 times the state's limit for phosphorus. So why does this matter? It's just a little phosphorus, right? Well, no. According to the St. John's River Water Management District, increasing total phosphorus often leads to algal blooms, specifically the toxin-producing variety, such as microcystis, which can cause nausea, rashes, and in drinking water, it creates long-term liver health issues. Waters in the upper basin of the St. John's provide drinking water for nearby at-risk communities. One lake in particular, Lake Washington, which lies directly north of some of the largest biosolids land application sites in the state, provides 2/3 of Melbourne's drinking water. Shockingly, between 2019 and 2021, there have been over 20 reported algal blooms in Lake Washington, and those are just the ones that have been reported. Local captain Mike Tipton has spent his whole life fishing and hunting in the area, and he says that in recent years, the upper basin of the St. John's has been contaminated, causing frequent algal blooms, and water quality is not the only thing that's declining. He says the bass fishing has declined dramatically in recent years. The time for change has come. That change starts today with the improvements being proposed by the FDEP to the state's currently flawed biosolids rules. These proposed rule changes include the common sense requirement for phosphorus from sewage sludge must not be applied above the agronomic rate for growing crops. Currently, phosphorus is being applied at rates significantly higher than the crop's agronomic rate. I think all Floridians can agree that the practice of knowingly applying more of anything than a crop needs is wrong and must stop immediately. New requirements for the annual testing and review of the soil to determine its capacity to hold phosphorus over time provides the data needed to manage these sites, balancing the need for crop yields, which is important, while attempting to be protective of water quality. The correlations are undeniable. It is clear that the St. John's River has been degraded by this waste disposal practice, yet these proposed rules are going to allow these massive biosolid land application sites to keep polluting and keep degrading our current levels for another 2 years until July 2023. We need you, Florida's policymakers, to do all you can to deliver North Florida's waterways from the unnecessary extension included in the proposed rules. And we also need you to lead the way in stopping the importation of sewage sludge waste into our state for short-term profit. It's time for our state to instead think long-term and end these practices that result in unequal protection under the law. Florida could then be bold and take steps to incentivize investment in emerging technologies and the wastewater infrastructure to remove more of these harmful nutrients at their source. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fine for a question.
Sort of a similar couple of, first off, I heard a step in the right direction. Are you for or against this bill today.
I appreciate the incremental change, especially the adaptive management that's being taken to year after year determine the capacity of the soils to take additional biosolids. But generally, I'm worried about the entire practice of bringing biosolids from the south north.
Representative Fine for a
follow-up. Okay, so just to clarify for those of us who aren't that bright, you support this bill, but you're sort of saying there's still a lot of the problem to solve. This is better than the status quo, but we still have work to do.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All right, members, moving on in public testimony, we have Alexandra Blinkley with DEP. Up next, we have John Truitt with DEP. Up next, we have David Serter.
It's my honor to be in front of your committee again, Chairman James Buchanan. I took the elevator with you the other day. I'm back up. Well, Bike Fest was a good thing, but hey, I just talked to the ombudsman of the St. John's River Water Management District as I drove up the St. John's River. You cannot make everybody happy. I believe in this bill. You know, you folks know what you're doing. You know, I'm part of Keep Lake Beautiful, Keep Our Paradise Litter Free. Volunteer, I got an Orlando one. I just talked to the Mayor Buddy Dyer's office. Wholeheartedly, you know, once upon a time we had a Main Street. We're proud of it. We took care of things. Now all streets are Main Streets. There's roads, houses everywhere. You can't make everybody happy. There's five districts of water management districts in the state of Florida. I tried to be appointed to the St. John's, you know, by the governor. The governor's doing what he can. He's working as hard as he can as you folks are. God bless you for what you do. You know, the time, what time is it, the gentleman will? The time is now. You are taking session in action. God bless you for what you're doing. You know, I just came from Bike Fest. I'm just an old part, just an old senior athlete that was here last year, had agent of the governor come and talk to me. I've got some ideas out there, but your ideas are what is now in action. And by God, you got a lot of lobbyists I'm finding out, telling things. You know, it's my honor to be in front of the Department of Environmental Protection. No way. Valentine is the boss, but this gentleman, I'd love him to listen to me on some ideas. I mean, we got a bottle pole that's shelved. Maybe you'll come out. Maybe the banner stayed in plastic bags. I'm worried about the environment. I am a certified commercial cleaner, certified in water damage for over 20 years. I worked in crap. You know, you're talking about wastewater. I'm in the sewers. I know the public works directors.
Let's keep it on the bill, please.
Thank you. I believe in it. Thank you so much. I'm a proponent of it.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, that concludes public testimony. Let's move on to debate. Is there any debate? Representative Hardy, recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Overdorf and I served together for a brief moment on Treasure Coast Regional Planning, where this issue was percolating several years ago. Very much supported the Technical Advisory Committee and the work that they do. This is an issue that really has been unaddressed by anyone in the state of Florida for a very long time. And I just want us to concentrate on what the bill in front of us is really about. This is a bill to ratify some rules that DEP took a long time to put together. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we can ratify these or we cannot. But if we don't, it's not as if we can immediately require DEP to, before we get out of here in less than 60 days now, come up with rules that are better. You know, and so the question is, do we take this step forward, however incremental it may be, or do we say no to this without having a real opportunity to address any concerns that might lead us to believe that what is in these rules isn't enough? And so I don't think it's responsible to say no to this. I'll be supporting this bill. And, you know, which ratifies, you know, the rules that DEP took a while to make. There are some concerns that I think have been pretty well fleshed out by the members of the public. And I do hope that next year we're looking at additional rules to address some of the concerns, in particular the biosolids loophole, right? I mean, this is like, you know, in economics you talk about beef or chicken, right? It's like a substitutable good. You move from one to the other, right? And so if the effect of increasing regulations on the sludge is that everybody moves to this other harmful thing that's not really addressed to the extent that it should be by these rules, then that has the ability to mitigate some of the positive impact of the bill. I am less concerned about that than I am about the status quo, which isn't working. And I very much appreciate the effort on the part of DEP. I very much appreciate the effort on the part of the representative, and I'll be voting in support of this bill. Thank you.
Members, debate on the bill. Debate. Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a big issue in my community, I think in yours as well. This decision to allow local politicians in the southern part of the state to basically send their problems to our part of the state has caused real problems. Basically, what we were told earlier is in order to protect the Everglades, we said basically to heck with the rest of the waters in the state. And that's what happened here, and it's simply not right. And to give you a sense of the cost of this, by the way, they had other choices for what they could do with all this stuff other than send it north. They can incinerate it, they can landfill it. You wanna know why they send it north? Because it's the cheapest way to handle it. That's the reason, because they're not being responsible. Now, this has real costs to my constituents in Brevard County. Most of us in the state, we get our drinking water not from the surface. They pull it out of the aquifer. For whatever reason, the water that my children drink is taken directly out of Lake Washington. It is treated, which is part of the St. John's River. In Brevard County, much of our water is surface water. And we had an issue last year where people literally could not drink their water. They were afraid to drink their water for weeks because we had one of these toxic algae outbreaks that people believe was created by biosolids. So this is a real issue where, again, terrible decisions made by politicians in South Florida have affected people in what I consider Central Florida. I don't see myself as part of North Florida. So this is a real issue. That said, I have a firm belief that just because something doesn't solve everything doesn't mean that we should solve nothing. And so I asked the folks who came up here and who opposed this bill, all right, it doesn't solve everything, but it is a step in the right direction. And they all said it was better than nothing. It's better to move in the right direction. So I don't think Chair Payne's gonna stand up here and says this solves everything. But I think what he's gonna do is he's gonna tell us it moves in the right direction. And I often say, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. This is a big one. And so I'll be supporting it today with the hope that we all continue to work on this issue because there's still a lot more work to do.
Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Members, Representative Fine is correct. This is a complex issue, and it's going to take a lot of time to fix this. This is certainly an issue that has been around for a while, but last year the legislature had the courage to start to address this through 712, through others. I know that Chair Payne, myself, others are committed to continuing to work on this issue, continuing to, as Mr. Fine said, take one bite at a time. And if you look at some of the things, though, we're looking at this year, we've got monitoring wells. We have additional implementation of a variety of different rules. And I think it's unfair to characterize this as a north versus south battle, if you will, over biosolids. It really is a statewide battle over this, and we really have to look at it as a statewide issue. So I'm committed to do that. I know the chairman is, and this is certainly a way to start this. So with that, members, I ask that you would also support this bill moving forward. Thank you.
Members, debate on the bill. Debate. Representative Umfroy, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you so very much for taking on this mission, Chair Payne. And I agree with my colleague, Representative Overdorf, that it is not a north or a south thing. You know, South Florida does provide 58 to 60% of the state's revenue, and we are looking to solve an issue that is very significant. So please don't beat up on South Florida. We love you too. Thank you very much, Chair Payne, for this. Appreciate you, sir.
Members, we're in debate. Any further debate? Representative Payne, you're recognized to close on HB 1309.
Thank you, Chair. And members, thank you. Rep Hardy, we've not had a lot of conversation, but I can understand by your comments that you get it. You understand. Certainly, Representative Overdorf and I've had numerous conversations, and Chair Fine have had numerous conversations. And he had a piece last year in the water bill that we did that actually implemented some fines. So we were very glad to see that. I would say this, that the law and the rule both require water monitoring, as Representative Oberdorf said, and will reduce these, and it will reduce application sites. Additionally, we know this is not the end game. I describe this as a process approach. This is not a program approach. Program approach ends. This is a process approach. It'll continue to go throughout our state. So through technology and better procedures, we'll get to greater improvements in water quality. With regard to our folks in the audience that spoke, I appreciate their comments, and certainly our goal and our desire is to make sure water quality throughout the state is in great condition. But I would remind them that they had opportunities to intervene prior to today through the state administrative hearing process. I don't believe they challenged. I don't believe there was a challenge at that time. I remind you that the rules ratification is the last step in the process. Why come to the legislature in the last step of the process to vet your problems when there's been numerous years? And yeah, they've been a part of the discussions. But if there's a real challenge, they want to take on the challenge. What I would tell you today is this is another piece of legislation that will continue to improve the quality throughout the state. We could ignore it, and we can go back to where we were 2 years ago when we started running water bills, and we had objections, and they didn't move forward. We kicked the can down the road, so to speak. This is a first bite of the elephant, as Chair Fine said. So with that, I'll close. And members, I would encourage you to vote for this bill today. Thank you.
With Representative Tain having closed on the bill, Brenda, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Alupis?
Yes.
Pousada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Diamond? Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Turnow?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Members, up next, we have HJR 1377, Limitation on Assets of Real Property Used for Residential Purposes, by our very own Representative Cheney. Representative Cheney, you are recognized to explain HJR 1377.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan, Vice Chair Tomko, Ranking Member Alexander, for the opportunity to present this HJR 1377. This joint resolution proposes an amendment to the Florida Constitution to authorize the legislature to prohibit the consideration of any change or improvement to residential real property made to improve the property's resistance to flood damage. Members, I believe that homeowners who are taking proactive measures to protect their property from flooding should not only be rewarded, but these actions should be incentivized, which is what this joint resolution does. Together with HB 1379, we offer property tax breaks to homeowners when their property is elevated to increase resistance to flood and sea level rise. This is a tool in the homeowner's toolbox to help combat flooding and sea level rise. This bill is supported by the American Flood Coalition, Pinellas County Property Appraiser, Florida Green Building Coalition, and that is the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Cheney. Members, we're in questions. Questions of the sponsor. Questions of the sponsor. Okay, moving on. There are no amendments. We do have public testimony on the bill. Natalie Fossil, Florida Association of Property Appraisers, Inc., waves in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, we're in debate on the bill. Debate on the bill. Representative Lamarca, you are recognized in the debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, this is a very good bill when you consider what can go into investment, long-term investment to making this happen for your family's safety and their major investment for a family. And I just think proud of the bill, and I'm going to be supporting it. And I'm glad that you mentioned that the American Flood Coalition is in support.
Members, debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Hardy, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, it's often said that no good deed goes unpunished. I appreciate this bill because it certainly thwarts that maxim. People shouldn't be whacked upside the head because they've done something that is not only good for themselves, but good for their communities. So this is a fantastic bill. Look forward to voting for it on the floor.
Members, debate. Debate. Any further debate? Okay, Representative Cheney, you're recognized to close on HJR 1377.
Wave close, Chair.
Brenda, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Alupis?
Yes.
Busada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Diamond? Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll keep you up there for HB 1379, property assessments for elevated properties, by Representative Cheney. Representative Cheney, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is tied to the passage of the joint resolution that we just discussed. If the joint resolution passes the legislature and is approved by the voters November 22nd, then this bill will take effect January 1st, 2023. Under this bill, the value added to residential property by owners proactively elevating their homes to increase the resistance from flooding or sea level rise would not be considered for property tax assessment purposes. Specifically, changes, additions, improvements that replace all or a portion of a residential property when it is voluntarily elevated do not increase the property's assessed value if the square footage of the property after the voluntary elevation does not exceed 1,500 square feet or does not exceed 110% of the square footage of the property before elevation, and before the voluntary elevation, the property did not comply with FEMA's NFIP requirements and Florida Building Code elevation requirements and was elevated to comply with these requirements. I believe these changes will encourage homeowners to take steps necessary to protect their homes from the disastrous impacts of flooding by offering tax breaks to those who voluntarily elevate their property. This bill is also supported by the American Flood Coalition, Pinellas Property Appraiser, Florida Green Building Coalition. Members, that is the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, Rep. Cheney. Members, questions? Are the questions of the sponsor? Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you. And saying at the outset, I think this is a great bill. I want to just ask a couple questions to potentially illustrate something we may have to work on. How does one elevate a house?
Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Typically, you're going to knock the house down to elevate it. Historic properties sometimes are raised because they're historic, but that's an expensive and an unusual process, so you're typically knocking your home down.
Follow-up?
Rep. Fine for a follow-up.
Okay, so if I buy, we have sort of generations of houses here in Florida. If I were to buy personally, let's say a 3,500-square-foot house on the ocean, that was built 40 years ago. And so the structure is probably not worth all that much. So basically I'm just paying for the land. And I were to buy that as an investor, because I think of these for my own ideas as I hear these bills. If I were to buy this 3,500 square foot, 40-year-old house on the beach, and I were to tear it down because it's low, and I were to elevate it by building a very, very nice 3,700 square foot house, on the beach, that's brand new, that structure could be worth millions of dollars. If this bill were to become law and the amendment were to pass, would I see any increase in my property taxes for doing that?
Rep. Cheney, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, that's exactly what this bill does, is encourages people to do just that. And secondly, as long as the renovation did not exceed 1,500 square feet, does not exceed 110% of the square footage of the property before the elevation, then yes, you would not see an increase in your property tax from buying your little shack on the beach to now living in your beautiful mansion on the beach. And that's just fine. We're trying to encourage property owners to do that.
I'm good for now.
Members, questions? Questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Just a more of a clarification question. Is there a renovation and a complete knockdown and new construction?
Representative Cheney.
We have to now be above FEMA's NFIP requirements. And so typically you can either knock the house down and raise it to whatever that elevation is, or you can build it up on dirt. But you have to meet the requirements of FEMA's elevation.
Members, we're in questions. Questions of the sponsor. Any further questions? Okay. Moving forward, we have an amendment by Representative Cheney, barcode 68883. Representative Cheney, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this amendment clarifies that changes, additions, or improvements must begin within 3 years after damage or destruction to the property. The bill inadvertently applied this requirement to voluntary elevation. The same clarification is made in two different parts of the bill, which is reason that the amendment is a little bit long, and that is the amendment, Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, questions on the amendment? Do we have any questions on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Cheney, you are recognized to close on the amendment. Oh, we'll back up a little bit. Representative Lupus for debate, please. Okay, we'll move forward. Representative Cheney, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
In closing, I just wanted to thank Pinellas County Property Appraiser for bringing this good idea forward to us, and I wanted to thank my PrimeCo, Rep. Alupis.
Thank you. All in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yay. All opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. There's no public testimony on the bill. Members, is there any debate on the bill? Representative Fine, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support the bill today, but I had an issue like this happen to me personally, and so I want to illustrate the issue, which I'm going to ask you to think about as it moves through the process, which is the purpose of the committee process, is to think about these kinds of issues. So in 2016, when I was running for office, my house was destroyed. I didn't know it was destroyed by Hurricane Matthew. We got water inside the walls, and we had an issue. And under the law, under the FEMA rules that she talks about, once a house is 51% damaged, you have to bring 100% up to code. And we learned, it took a year, we realized the house had been 51% damaged. And the original part of the house, we had doubled the size of it, but the original part of our house was built in 1993 when the minimum flood elevation was a foot lower than it had become by 2017 when this all happened. So I said, how do you fix this? How do you bring a house up to code? And as Representative Cheney pointed out, you can't renovate, you gotta tear it down. You can't lift the house up a foot. I mean, you can with a few exceptions with these old historic houses, but generally, we're not talking about renovations in this idea. What we're talking about is tearing down homes and building new ones. And so what I'm asking you to think about moving forward. I don't want us to get in the way of this. I think people hear this bill and they're thinking about us as homeowners and we're gonna do things to improve our home and we shouldn't get taxed for it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about tearing down old houses and building new houses in general. And so I'm concerned, and this is what I ask you to think about, is really what we're doing here is we're creating tax arbitrage for rich people, where guys like me go and buy old houses on the beach or on water of a certain size that aren't worth that much because they're very old, buy them, tear them down, build brand new houses, and never have to pay taxes on those brand new houses. I actually had that opportunity on my house that got destroyed because it was destroyed by a hurricane. We don't penalize people when they rebuild. But I didn't rebuild. My wife said if we rebuilt, we were going to get divorced. So I decided not to do that. But that was one of the big incentives for me. It was, wow, I can build a brand new house, making up for this 1993 house, and I won't have to pay any extra property taxes for it, as long as I don't make it 10% bigger than it was before. That's the concern, because I don't think our goal here is to allow wealthy people like me to buy old houses in really nice places, tear them down, build big, beautiful ones that are 10% bigger than the ones that were there, and then not have to pay property taxes on them. But that is one of the unintended consequences of the legislation as drafted. I support the principle of it. I'm going to vote for it today, but I think you want to think about that, because that could create an enormous cottage industry. Because there are, if you think about where we live, there are many, many beautiful pieces of property on water prone to flooding that have pretty old houses on them, where you could see a whole industry develop about this, which again, it's tax arbitrage for rich folks. And that's what I would encourage you. All that said, I'm still up because I think you're going to work on it moving forward, but think about all this over the next couple weeks.
Members, debate on the bill. Debate. Representative LaMarco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative. Just to kind of tag on, I just want to say right off the bat, I'm supporting the bill. In your process of traveling back and forth, if you can get over to the other side of the state, in Martin County, I had the opportunity to look at a whole neighborhood actually that was in low area on waterfront that was lift, that the homes were literally raised up. They weren't raised and knocked down. They were elevated and they were jacked up with hydraulics and other things and new foundations poured. So something definitely to look at. And again, I'm supporting the bill, and I want to just clarify, and it's not a question, I understand that, but evade taxes completely. It's just no new taxes, and that's why I'll be supporting the bill.
Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Hardy, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support certainly the thrust of the bill. I think it's a great idea. You shouldn't punish people for doing a great thing. Chair Fine has raised an issue that I think matters. And I will obviously be supporting this bill. I think there might be some things to work through. And the time has passed for questions. But when we discuss this offline, you know, I'm wondering if the process of obtaining a homestead provides any kind of limitation on the ability of people to engage in what Chair Fine was discussing. If it does not, this could be very concerning. And it's frankly something that I didn't catch. And as Chair Fine said, that's exactly what this. You know, the thrust of the bill is great, and I'll be voting for it today.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Cheney, for bringing this bill and for allowing me your co-pilot. I'm the prime co on this bill. I had the chance to speak to my good friend Representative Fine earlier today, and he expressed his concern. And I absolutely think through this process, these issues can be addressed. I note that in the HJR, well, this is the implementing bill, the HJR line 180 references specifically flood damage. And I think, you know, there's a very fine line that we have to walk that addresses both the concerns that Representative Fine and Representative Hardy raise, with also incentivizing someone, if they're going to knock down a home and build again, to make sure that they're doing so in a way that addresses flood concerns. You shouldn't be able to just build a home without addressing what the long-term impact of sea level rise is going to be. So I think, you know, what I would say first and foremost is, again, thank you for letting me be on this journey with you. I think this is very important legislation, and that it incentivizes people to do what's best to protect their homestead. And I just think some of these questions that we've heard today are exactly why the committee process exists. And I know that we will get this bill to exactly where it needs to be before it gets to the floor. So thank you for bringing it, and I'll clearly be up today.
Members, debate. Debate on the bill. Seeing no further debate, Representative Cheney, you are recognized to close on HB 1379.
I'd just like to reiterate that the intention of this bill is to make our communities more resilient to flooding. And it's an opportunity for whoever is able to raise their property and get it out of harm's way from storms and flooding. The more homes that will do this, the better off the state of Florida and the communities will be. Their insurance, their flooding insurance will be reduced when they do that. And as far as the communities go, it will be the same property tax on the tax log, so there's no loss. However, there's a long-term gain when that property is sold after it's been elevated. It's now worth a lot more money. So in the immediate actions of the elevation, it's a benefit to the community and the overall state of Florida, and long-term, it'll increase the property tax rolls. That's my close.
Brenda, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Lupus?
Yes.
Busada?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Diamond? Fine?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Hinshofsky?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Smith?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably with a committee substitute. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Members, this concludes our meeting agenda for the day. Once we adjourn, please remember to exit promptly so the room can be sanitized. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Fine moves we rise. Without objection, meeting is adjourned.